Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Mike Dempsey.
Hey, glad you're with us this morning. Back live at Everbank. Johnny O, the senior writer from Jaguars.com, will be along in about 10 minutes, and we'll talk a little Jaguar football. Mike Dempsey here with you. Fat Tony up in Augusta. He's taking in the par 3 contest at Augusta National tomorrow, and I heard Jeff Prosser mention it this morning, and many others have. It's better to go for the practice rounds. You got better access. A lot of people say that about the players as well. You know, they have more fun going to the practice rounds. It's more relaxed. You can get a little bit more up close, easier to follow a group, whatever the case may be. Hey, take it in however you like it. But that's what's going on with Tony. He's excited about that. So we'll check in with him maybe later in the week. As far as that score goes, 3.5 weeks from the NFL draft. Found out yesterday I'll be going back for the draft, doing shows up there all Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday as the draft gets underway. 3 weeks from this Thursday coming up, yes, we will hear that sound over and over and over again, and with at least 8 times with the Jags if they don't trade any of their picks as it stands right now. And speaking of all their picks, Roto World threw a 7-round mock draft at the wall. We'll tell you who the Jaguars are selecting in each round according to those folks and how they view the biggest team needs. But I got to spend a couple more minutes talking about last night's game. We don't get an opportunity, and I mean that. There are days I'd like the opportunity to talk for 2 hours about sporting events other than what's happening in the NFL offseason. And last night was one of those spectacular games. Tyler, what year were you born?
I was born in 1992.
92. So you didn't see Keith Smart.
I did not see Keith Smart, but I've seen the clip many, many times.
I'm sure you have, right? But, I mean, that's your school. Is there an NCAA tournament moment prior to yesterday that was most ingrained in your mind as a kid watching basketball growing up? Because in Indiana, I imagine you watch the NCAA tournament every year from when you're old enough to understand what its significance was.
Well, for me, it's the Indiana upsetting number one Duke when Duke had Jay Williams, Carlos Boozer. They had 6 NBA players, and Indiana was just, you know, an inferior squad. And like Villanova last night, they were the better team, and sometimes the better team beats the team full of talent, you know?
Right. And look, I don't think Nova is an untalented team, but they had played some good basketball against big-time competition. But I think I grew up, I was spoiled in an era when I first started to pay attention to the NCAA men's basketball tournament. We had Bird versus Magic, right? We had Derek Wittenberg to Lorenzo Charles on they beat him on the dunk with NC State and Houston. We had Villanova beating Georgetown, one of the greatest upsets we'd ever seen. We had Keith Smart making the final shot. We had Michael Jordan making the final shot. We had all these amazing, indelible moments. Add this one to the pile last night, and that was one of the great finishes you'll see. And I thought the game, the way it played out, you see games sometimes where one team is dominating and the other team comes back and makes it a game. I didn't, even though Villanova got up by 10 last night, the ease and efficiency, which with North Carolina cut that down, put them right back in it, made you think they had all the momentum there at the end. I never really felt like anybody was running away with that game yesterday, even when they got down 10, because they had hit so many three-pointers in the game last night. Just a great back-and-forth contest, each team having its turn at the top, and then finally those 2 shots. Marcus Page, it's got to be sick, man. I mean, he did. He was the biggest of big men on campus, and I guess still is in some regards today. That was a pretty amazing game-tying shot with 4.7 seconds left, but trumped by the game winner from Chris Jenkins. So with that, today's Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day asks you this: what is your favorite non-NFL sporting event? Not sport per se, not just college basketball in general, but sporting event, whether it's the NCAA tournament, whether it's the World Series, whether it's something else, whether it's an all-star game, whatever that is to you. What is the thing that gets you going outside of the National Football League? And we made it outside of the NFL for a specific reason, because a lot of people, I think, would say, the Super Bowl or what have you, even if the Jags aren't playing in it. That is ultimately the goal, to see your team playing it. But outside of the NFL, what is your favorite sporting event? You can share your thoughts with us on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. You can tweet us at MD underscore 1010XL, at 1010XL Tyler, And, of course, you can text us on the 1010XL text line driven by Duval Four. That's 641-1010. Phone lines will be open to you coming up in a few minutes as well. John Osier is going to join me. We'll talk about where the Jags stand now 3.5 weeks away. Jalen Ramsey coming in today. Robert Condici coming in tomorrow, according to Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times-Union. Again, thanks to Ryan and T-Week for filling in for me yesterday with Hayes Carline jumping in as well. We'll hear some of Hayes' thoughts about what a potential trade could look like if the Jags are going to move down in the first round. As I said, we'll get to Roto-World 7-round mock today. Todd McShay updating his big board. How do guys rise up the big board if they haven't done anything? It's always a mystery this time of year, but we'll tell you which prospects are solidifying themselves in the eyes of Todd McShay as the draft approaches ever closer inside 4 weeks. 641-1010, the number if you want to be a part of it. John Osier, the senior writer from Jaguars.com, joins us in studio next, live at EverBank. Jaguars Today just kicking off. Mike Dempsey here with you on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, happy Tuesday to you. Mike Dempsey here with Johnny O. John Osher, senior writer from Jaguars.com, joins me in the Work in Progress Studios down here at EverBank in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Work in Progress Studios. How are
did
you?
Did I hear you go off script for a Dandy commercial a minute ago?
I did, kind like of. Right? I just threw it right out. I crumpled it up, mentally crumpled it up, and threw it out.
Yeah.
I did. I really, people think I'm kidding. I eat Dandy sandwiches all the time.
You enjoyed your Dandy sandwiches?
I had one for lunch, and then I had two for dinner. So
it was a Dandy day for you.
It was quite a Dandy day for me.
Good.
You know? And I went, John, as I suggest to people, I went with the varieties I liked.
Sure.
But I like may not be what you like.
Well, but there's a lot of variety.
That's
so
fun. And you know what? This time of year, we're building towards the draft. We have our attention on that. We've got some visitors coming in to the Jags over the next few days. But glad for as little college basketball as I watch this season, as poorly as I did, once again with my NCAA tournament picks, glad I tuned in to watch that game last
night.
It was
unbelievable.
It really was unbelievable, right? I mean, you know, you and I are similar in age, and you think back, and I was just kind of recounting with Tyler all the indelible memories of the NCAA tournament that we've had in our viewing lifetime. That, I mean, this shot goes right near the top with the rest of them.
Yeah, there was a time, and that was our age where college basketball really mattered to us for, you know, 10, 12 years. I haven't watched it as much lately. I mean, there was a time where I may not have been in here today because I was a huge Carolina fan back in the day.
Well, devastation going on, gut punch.
I would have been on the floor. But as I was watching that game last night, I was pulling for him. I can't say I wasn't a little fired up when Paige hit the three, just, you know, because I still have an attachment to the uniform from back in the day. But then after he hit it, I thought to myself, you know what? I'll bet Nova comes down and hits one. I thought they were the better team overall. I thought they controlled the game more, probably played smarter. And I just had a feeling fate was going to be in the hands of Nova on that one. And I honestly haven't watched college basketball very much the last 2 or 3 years because overall I think the quality of play has really gone down just from when we were watching it because everybody going early.
Yeah, nobody stays around to develop great teams.
All of that said, then it gives you something like that at the end where Paige hits a shot that, you know, boy, you almost feel bad for him. Not for Carolina or anything like that, but that would have been one of the all-times.
No question.
I mean, to hang in
the
air like
that's like Mario Chalmers, right? Tying the game up for Kansas against Memphis. How long are we going back on that? Is that
08,
10 years ago?
07.
Something like that, though, right? But, I mean, memorable. You don't think about memorable plays that tie games quite as often, but the contortions
that was unlike
were
anything I mean,
spectacular.
I don't say it's unlike anything I've ever seen, but when they sort of flashed to Jordan after that shot, if you remember, and the commentator made the comment of, oh, he knows what that's like. Well, if he was talking about the Georgetown shot, that was nothing compared to that shot. Georgetown
that was
shot
a baseline jumper, 17-footer.
I mean, it was a little further out. But, yeah, that shot meant something to me back in the day, Mike, so I know exactly where that spot was on the floor. But, yeah, that was a pressurized shot, certainly, because they were down, and it was Dean's first national title, and there was all sorts of pressure on the shot. But it wasn't nearly as difficult a shot as that thing last night.
Oh, no.
That was unbelievable.
No.
So
Jordan's had a few of his
absolutely
high degree of difficulty shots go down as well.
But if they were talking about that shot.
I understand. In a game-winning situation.
Yeah. Right. It is funny what you said, though. There were so many in the 80s, and I don't know if it was because that was our time to be in college where we were going out.
That's part of it. I do think it's a young man's viewing experience because you're out, you're playing pickup basketball no matter who you are in college.
You have time to watch the whole tournament. You're into it.
They're your age, man. You know, and plus you had super teams back then.
Back in the day, I remember a good friend of mine, I talk about on the show sometimes, David Barksdale and I played basketball together all the time at a very low level, mind you, but we played. And another friend of mine, Mark Cannon, the night of that Georgetown-UNC game we're talking about, phone calls back and forth. One of us was for Georgetown, one was for Carolina. And it just mattered back in the day. I mean, it was a lot of fun. I'm sure there were kids that age watching that game the same way last night. So it was fun.
Oh, yeah. They'll remember that one, but they haven't had as many, I don't think. You know what? I say that. I don't pay attention to it like
shot,
I used to.
About,
right.
I mean,
there are a few, but that was quite a run that they had in the 1980s.
Well, back in the day, too, I think there was something where, you know, maybe we didn't see quite as many sports all the time year-round, and we weren't always vested in it the way Twitter has us invested in every sporting event that's on now. So maybe the NCAA tournament felt more like a group experience and you just remembered a little more. So,
all right. How about halfway between the elbow and the baseline? Sound about right?
About that.
Yeah. All right.
It's not a baseline jumper.
No, it's not. But it's kind of, you know, that same general vicinity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That shot mattered to me back
then. I know it did. I know it did. All right. Today, Jalen Ramsey in today. Robert Condici coming in. Tyler, who were you telling me was coming in as well? We saw Ian Rappaport reporting that was going to visit today or tomorrow.
Yeah, Rand Getlin says Clemson safety Jaron Kearse is coming in. Also, Mike Duraco says that Miles Jack is visiting the Jags today.
Well, good. Tell him to stop by the studio in the next 90 minutes, and we'd love to chat him up. How important is it, John, in the experience you've had covering the Dave Caldwell regime that they have this in-house visit with these guys, or is it just one of these things that you do and you can't read too much into the presence of or lack of one of these visits?
Well, if memory serves, I think Jokel was in, I think Bortles was in, I'm pretty sure Fowler was in, or at the very least they had presence at a pro day. How important is it? Not very. But it's interesting. I mean, I don't – knowing Dave Caldwell, I wouldn't put it past him to bring these guys in and draft somebody else. It's not – I don't think it's the it's a huge indication of who they're going to draft, certainly because there's so many of them, you know, here. If I don't know that Bose is coming in, but if Bose, Jack, and Ramsey are all here – well, I think that's the odds on favor of who they're going to pick. So I don't know how.
Right.
Much
I
of
mean,
a tell
when,
really
and when
is,
you're
but,
picking the top five, there's less of a pool you need to bring in to feel like you hit
sure.
your likely target
so,
in that group.
I don't. I guess I'm stammering around saying I don't put a whole lot of stock into, hey, they talked to this guy at the Senior Bowl, they talked to this guy at the Combine, they have visits scheduled. It's fine that they're here, but if you're bringing in 15 guys, and you're bringing in 8 of the top 10, well, they're probably going to pick one up. So I don't know exactly how excited to get about the fact that they're here.
All right, then let's put it this way then. What are they looking to accomplish with these visits, right? Jalen Ramsey comes in. Do you need to – you're not going to make him, you know, run a 40. You've seen all
right,
the athleticism. He's done all these things. So how important is it to get to know the makeup of these players, what they're about? You know, we want guys who have football as their highest priority kind of thing.
I think it's comfort level. It gives you an ease when you're sitting in that room and you're picking up that phone. If you're Dave Caldwell, now you've been around him for 3 or 4 hours, like studying for a test. If you've prepared and you're going in and you've done that last little review, you feel a little better going into the test. You feel a little more comfortable. I don't know that there's that many red flags that would be raised on a visit like today. I think, but it does give you a sense. It gives the coaches, it maybe gives the position coach a chance to be around him a little more than maybe he would have been to sit in a room and put the quarterback on the board. No quarterbacks today, but you know what I'm saying. to get inside their head a little bit. It just gives them a little bit more of a comfort level. I think this is probably one of the, I would say, least important. But if you're talking about the draft process as a mosaic, if you will, this is probably one of the least important pieces in terms of where they're going to rank on the board. But it's not a bad thing to have had the guy in so that each side has a comfort level if that is indeed the guy you picked.
And right.
I also think there is an element of, you bring in 30 guys, or I don't know how many the number is eventually. I think you can bring in 30. Overall, these teams do like to also have a feel for guys for down the road, meaning in free agency the next time around. They like to have talked to a guy. They like to have had a visit. They like to have some sort of comfort zone so when they call an agent later on, the player can say, yeah, I met Gus. He's cool. Yeah, I mean, something like that. You just like to be out there and have your tentacles out there as much as you can and know as many people as possible. So there's a little bit of an element to that. You don't want to not do it.
RotoWorld's Josh Norris did a 7-round mock. Later on, I'm going to get through the Jags picks. You know, it's kind of pick by pick. Really looking more, not so much
you
at the specific player.
Round mocks.
Hey, brother, we're 3.5 weeks
That's
after
right.
the draft. If there was an 8-round mock, I'd break that one down too.
And let's do it. I'll do it.
I get it. There are only 7 rounds in the draft. But the next point I was going to make is at RotoWorld, Evan Silva did a ranking of the top draft needs for the Jags as it stands right now, and they put
does a nice job, by the way.
Right, edge rusher number one. And yeah. I don't think anybody would dispute that that is the need. Whether that means they're going to go for that at the fifth pick or not, that depends on the value. Team need number two, center. You agree with that?
No. And I answered this in the Ozone a couple of days ago. It's easy looking at it from a national perspective if you're not really digging deep and really into the dialogue around this team to look and say, okay, Stefan Wisniewski left. They didn't re-sign him. Now they have a hold center. They need a center. Well, that makes sense. I think they need an interior lineman at some point, clearly, to step up or to move around, put somewhere. Does that become Kelvin Beachum or Luke Jokel moving to guard with Linder at center? Something needs to happen to fill a spot on the interior. But I don't think this team is necessarily looking at, oh, my goodness, we have to draft a center. Now, if one falls to them at the right value that they just love, could they reverse paths? I think their path, it sounds like their path is Brandon Linder right now to me. So if something falls to them where it just makes too much sense not to take a guy, could they reverse paths and do that? Maybe.
Is the second round too early, in your opinion, to even consider any offensive lineman?
Boy, I think so with the needs on defense. I mean, I think that's why they feel like they've got a game plan in place for offensive line that doesn't mean that helps them not have to go that high.
Right, which has included bringing in guys like Mackenzie Bernadotte
absolutely.
And now Tanner Hawkinson, who's the latest kind of right. veteran players who've been around, have a little bit of versatility in
and
where
Beachum,
they can play.
And, you know, again, if you're
– Beachum I look at differently, though. I mean, Beachum is a guy that is – going to be at worst in a pitch battle for the starting left tackle spot.
Right, but I'm saying that gives you – bringing Beachum in gives you, in their mind, gives you five guys that you don't worry about having in the starting lineup. I think if they had to put Beachum – if they had to I say tomorrow, okay, there has been no competition, what are we going to do? I think they would be okay with rolling Jokel, Beachum, Linder, Can, and Parnell out there in some capacity. They're not worried about trying to line up, I guess, is my point. If nothing falls to them in the draft, then they've got that, and they also like Bowenko and Shatley and Bernadette. They're certainly deeper and have more to work with. Somewhere they do offensive line in the draft, I think, but I don't think they're going into it thinking, oh, my goodness, if we don't get a center, we're in bad trouble.
By the way, the third need that they ranked was linebacker. I think a lot of people would agree that linebacker is a need. Not that you need someone to field a starting lineup right now, but you certainly need some depth at the position and an eye towards the future.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they take three linebackers in the draft somewhere.
Yeah, right. We all think that Miles Jack is under serious consideration with the first pick,
right.
And then others, if well, only
interesting
for depth.
That, Jack told somebody, I guess, about the strong safety hybrid linebacker possibility. If that's what you're thinking of, I still wouldn't be surprised to see two more. I just think you've got to get faster at that spot in terms of your depth.
All right, he's John Osier from Jaguars.com. He's going to stick around. We'll talk more Jaguar football coming up, including an interesting hypothetical Hayes Carline of the Times Union threw out on this program yesterday about the Jags moving down in the first round. We'll get into that coming up as well. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010 is a phone number. It also works as the 1010XL text line, which is driven by Duval Ford. So weigh in there. The question of the day is this. It's brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Outside of the National Football League, what is your favorite sporting event? And that's in honor of a fantastic men's basketball championship game last night with Villanova knocking off North Carolina. Mike Dempsey live with John Osier at Everbank. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
If the Rams general manager last night calls Dave Caldwell and says, we want to come up from 15 to 5 and we'll give you both those second rounders, I think you'd do it. I mean, usually when you move 10 spots, that means a future first rounder, which obviously any team's going to be reluctant to part with. If I'm the Jaguars, I don't need that first rounder in 2017. I mean, I'm not even sure if I'm going to be here to use it. And why would I want to leave somebody else with that, you know, golden asset? If I'm Dave Caldwell, I want the 2 second rounders from the Rams, like you mentioned, that they got in the Sam Bradford deal. That gives the Jaguars 4 picks, I believe, in the top 46. They would own the draft.
You know, John Osier here with me, Mike Dempsey, with you on Jaguars today. John said to me earlier this morning, what would we do at this time of year without a good 7-round mock draft?
Or you know, without a good projection.
We would do trade hypotheticals.
That's
is
right.
What we do. We do them every damn day is what we do, John. And we do them lovingly.
Yeah, and it's an intrigue. That was
Hayes Carline of the Florida Times Union on yesterday.
And Ryan talking about trading back to 15 to get the Rams.
They have 43 and 45 overall.
Yeah.
Jags have 38, for instance, in the second round. So they'd have another pick 5 and then set 2 more picks after that.
That would also, if you so chose, give you pretty good ammo if you wanted to move back into late in the first round, which might make some sense if there's edge rusher there.
You would think 38 and 45 could get you a pretty solid first round pick.
Right, if that's what you want to do. And, you know, it makes sense. I don't know that, to overstate the obvious, it all depends on how much. I don't think Dave does that until he's on the clock.
Of course.
First of all. And then it depends. Are you in love with a player that's there? You would think either Jalen Ramsey or Miles Jack would be there at 5. And then that's when you think that's when Dave's got to decide, do I love this guy enough? Is he impact enough? Is he difference making enough? Because you don't want to trade away from a guy that you believe is a difference maker.
He has said quite frequently over the last few years, give me one great player over several good players.
Right.
Especially as the roster gets better.
And
the worse
when
the roster
with Atlanta,
is.
Atlanta, they did that in terms of
getting Julio Jones.
Let's get difference making, franchise defining guy. And it depends on Dave's gut or his analysis. Is one of these guys a franchise-defining guy?
Nobody knows the answer to that right now. Nobody knows exactly what Dave Caldwell is thinking in terms of how comfortable he would be moving back in this first round, what the wish list looks like. But just from what you've gathered, what is the range? I mean, we're talking about a drop now from 5 to 15. In terms of first-round picks, that's a significant drop. Is that outside your best guess? Is that outside the Dave Caldwell comfort zone?
Well, yes. If what he said at the owners' meetings is correct, which is early teens, because to me 15 is mid-teens, or it's, I guess if 13 starts, it'd be technically early. But I got the impression 12, 13-ish was as far back as he wanted to go, and that's just reading tea leaves based on what he said at the owners' meetings. But that's where NFL trading becomes what it is, meaning you don't always get what you want. Sometimes you have to compromise, and sometimes trades have to be even. So moving back to 15 might be a little out of his comfort zone, but you get the benefit of getting 2 of the top 50 players in the draft instead of 1. So those are
or
the
3 instead of 1,
make.
Because you still get the 15th pick. It's just not as
correct.
Premier. So, you know, it's a 3-for-1 type
right.
deal is what you're looking at.
Right. So that, you know, again, you hate to be wishy-washy. You just don't know how he feels about Jack and Ramsey, who I'm assuming would be the two guys that you'd be trying to trade away from.
All right, Trader John is on the clock, and maybe one of the guys that you really like is there. How do you feel about that compensation, just in general? And I get it. Every player's
different. If I really like him, I don't take it.
If you really like, you're just going to take the guy, and you're not going to take the trade.
Now, if I sort of like him, then I take the trade. See, so if you believe that Miles Jack is
destined to be a multi-time Pro Bowler,
Luke Kuechly, change your defense, define your franchise, teams are scared of him, game plan guy, then you don't trade out of it. Because those guys don't come around that often, and your percentages of getting them are higher in the top five than they are in the top 15.
Miles Jack, who's supposed to be visiting today with the Jacksonville Jaguars, so is Jalen Ramsey. They're among many that will visit with the Jags over this process, not trying to single them out for any special treatment in that regard.
Yeah, but probably a lot of guys that aren't out there, too.
Well, sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Miles Jack, though, from what I understand, and I don't know Miles Jack, never met him. But
he speaks so highly of you.
I know. I would expect that. It's my work with his UCLA Bruin alumni, Maurice Jones-Drew, that does it, because he certainly talks up Miles Jack, trust me. But he's a guy, he's got an edgier personality, right? He's a little bit more in your face, a little more. I mean, this team doesn't have too many over-the-top personalities, right? I mean, how much does that factor in? I'm not trying to suggest Miles Jack has done anything wrong or improper to where he shouldn't be under consideration by the Jaguars. But what is Dave Caldwell's comfort level with some guys that are a little edgier, that push the envelope a little bit more?
Oh, I don't think he has a problem with that at all. I mean, does he want bad character guys? No.
That's a different story.
Sure. But does he want edgy guy? I mean, I would argue, I think in the next couple of years, you're going to see Allen Robinson much more edgy, if you will, on the field. I mean, he showed some of it last year, some in your face with the crowd. I don't want to say trash talk, but a very confident, brash, that's okay in this league. Allen Robinson's a great kid, but he also shows a side of himself on the field that he's competitive and he'll get in your face. So, I don't think that would be a problem at all. I mean, I would be very surprised if that's a problem. I think he kind of like that.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's necessarily a problem. It's just that this team, don't you agree, though, right now? I mean, who would you say are the biggest personalities on this team? The quarterback's got to be have a commanding presence, but yeah. Blake's pretty laid-back guy, I think. You know what I mean?
Well, it's a little hard to have a huge personality if you're not winning, because it's hard to be out there talking trash when you're down by 10. You know, the other team just points to the scoreboard. So that's a
little... I'm not even talking about trash talking necessarily. I'm talking about who are the guys that are the clear leaders in the cult of personality department, you know, and the guys that people gravitate towards.
Blake, which is a good thing because he's supposed to be that, even though he's not Mr. In Your Face, but he's... His personality.
He's accepted as a leader because he's a good guy. He's got a great work ethic.
Right.
He's talented.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, there's no reason. There's nothing that he does that you say he's lacking what I'm looking for in a franchise.
No, players love him. I mean,
right. They love him.
Being
they
around.
Love
I mean,
him.
And believe in him, which is more important than loving him. You know, probably. Your point being there's not anybody that stands out.
I'm just curious, because like Paz, I think, is considered a leader, but it's more of a lead by example.
Well, easy to forget, he only played five games, but Senderek clearly is a guy that
That's
the defense
true.
Rallies around. Arroy, believe it or not, very much, he doesn't really show it in the media that much, but they gravitate to Roy. Roy's a very powerful, bold leader, if you will. Audric's got some of that personality, I would say. I mean, there's guys. And Telvin, as he gets better and as he grows into it, will be that. I think Deshaun Gibson seems to have a chance to be that.
He's got a great personality, yeah. You know, at least.
I think Aaron Colvin would be if he can continue to get better. I think you got to be pretty good to be brash. And right now they haven't really established – not enough guys have established themselves as elite, follow me, I'm going to always be good guy. You know, I don't think Ray Lewis's pre-game dance sack or whatever it was, the gyrations, would have been that cool if he didn't, if he wasn't good.
Right. Like, I don't know. If, that was Justin Durant's right. deal. It wouldn't have been as effective.
It would have sort of looked silly.
Yeah. All right. Hey, before we let you get out of here today, the question of the day is, what is your favorite non-NFL sporting event? What is the thing that you will, whether you know it turns out to be a competitive game or not, what is the one, you know, must-not-miss kind of event?
The thing that I always watch?
Yeah.
Any Grand Slam tennis tournament, believe it or not.
Is that what it is?
I mean, I always watch that. It's sort of a family thing. We always sort of watch that together. So I always make time and watch the slams. I really enjoy that. Probably from stemming when I was a kid, it was so big here in the U.S. that it just sort of became something that I always watched.
I used to watch Wimbledon with my – particularly Wimbledon with my mom every year.
Yeah.
It was like a thing. She It was
and
her favorite sporting event.
Once Federer retires, I don't know that I'll
What's
be
there other than the fact that he's great, I mean, it seems like he's incredibly boring. Is that
he's great.
Is that incorrect?
If you enjoy tennis – the way he plays, the, I guess, beauty that he plays with is phenomenal.
All right.
And, but I'd say hockey playoffs, believe it or not. I will absolutely religiously watch the hockey playoffs.
So which is it? Is it the tennis or is it the hockey? Or it's several of these things?
Both?
Well, you can. Well, what's the number one? What's the one? If you could only watch one of those this year, what would it be?
I'd say Wimbledon final then.
Yeah?
Sure.
All right, well, there you go.
As long as Fed's in it.
Then we've got as long as he's in it. Well, that's fine, you know, because I'm the same way. I'm not going to say the World Series. If my team's in the World Series,
right.
It's number one on the list.
Right.
But you can't guarantee that every single year, you know.
Yeah, that's probably, you know, the only thing I'll pay for, I mean, I'll make sure that I've got whatever channel I need to watch the Stanley Cup, though.
Well, you know.
And I'm really cheap, so that's saying something.
Is it a good thing or a bad? Does it matter that the NCAA Men's Championship is on TBS? How much does that hurt? Does it? It's got to hurt a little bit. Not we assume in this day and age,
right.
That in the jobs that we do, that everybody has cable and watches nothing but sports all the time.
Because I cut the cord, so to speak. I mean, I do everything streaming now. I don't have Xfinity cable, and there were a couple of times where my reception got a little dicey.
What did you do? The March Madness on Demand deal on CBS?
What did I do? No, I've got PlayStation View now, which is sort of a new streaming service. So that's what I used, but it got dicey in the first half. With the Super Bowl, I would have just gone to Antenna, which was CBS, which everybody can get. With this, I couldn't have done that. So it's got to affect it on some level.
Rabbit ears for Johnny O. All right.
Yeah, what do you have? Not really rabbit ears anymore, but yeah.
What do you have coming up, by the way, on Jaguars.com?
Blake Bortles on Jaguars.com live tomorrow.
Nice.
So that's sort of our we're all excited about that.
All right. I hope he enjoys,
we may even get cake.
I hope he enjoys the ambiance in the JLI studios.
He loves hanging out with the O's.
I know he does. All right, Johnny O. We'll see you, buddy.
All right, guy.
There he goes. John Osier with us here on Jaguars Today this morning. As we get ready for this date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL, Mike Dempsey, Tyler Devitt here with you. 641-1010 is the number. That's also the 1010XL text line driven by Duval Ford, where you can weigh in on any of those platforms, Twitter, Facebook, you name it. The question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships. What is your favorite non-NFL sporting event? Share your thoughts with us. Coming back with this date in football next on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, time for a look at this date in football history. We'll take you back to April 5th, 1973. That was the date that the NFL adopted their jersey numbering system. In other words, wide receivers had to wear jerseys in the 80s, or I guess now in the single digits. They've mixed it up a little bit, but you get the idea. Certain positions can only wear certain numbers, and that is done to make it easier in part on the referees with substitutions and knowing which players are eligible and the like. Famous birthdays for this date. Well, if he wasn't born in 1960, his son wouldn't be the quarterback of the Colts right now. Oliver Luck, four-year player in the NFL with the Houston Oilers, was born on this date in 1960. And, of course, the father of Andrew Luck, Oliver Luck, turns 56 years old today. Former Gator great Ike Hilliard was born in the state in 1976. Happy 40th to Ike. You look at the cumulative totals for Ike Hilliard in the National Football League, probably a little bit more successful than maybe even remember. 546 receptions for over 6,000 yards and 35 touchdowns in his career. Not too shabby for Ike Hilliard, a former first-round pick out of the University of Florida. And that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Well, Mike, Commissioner Roger Goodell was in Jacksonville last week accepting a leadership award. And Goodell held a town hall-type event with Jaguars season ticket holders filling in for the questions for Roger Goodell. And the story that's picking up steam around the nation is Goodell was asked about expanding the playoffs. And here's what he had to say, the soundbite courtesy of Jaguars.com.
It's a tough one. You know, and the reason I say that is it works so well right now. We have 12 teams to qualify for the playoffs. And what it does, and it's not just the number of teams in the playoffs, it's what it does to our regular season. I think what makes the NFL great is every game means so much. That game means a great deal. And you don't want to ever lose that. You don't want to lose the fact that every regular season game is important. And only having 12 teams qualify, which is the smallest of any of the professional leagues by far, that's a good thing for us, is qualifying for that. Could you do it? Yes, you could do it. From a competitive standpoint, our competition committee said we think we can do it properly. We're still looking at the broadcasting side of it. And then there's a labor relations side of it, too, which you have to deal with the union. But it'll continue to get discussion. Likely will happen at some point, but we want to be really cautious because we really like the balance we have and the importance of the regular season and the postseason. And you don't want to mess with that balance. You got to be really careful and cautious.
Again, the entire 23-minute town hall with the commissioners available on Jaguars.com. Everyone's favorite pass rusher, Mike, Greg Hardy, had a one-on-one interview with ESPN's Adam Schefter, and one of the topics discussed was his 2014 incident with his former girlfriend. And Greg Hardy flat out denies that he has ever hit a woman.
I've never put my hand on any woman. In my whole entire life. No, sir. That's just not how we raised. Just, as you can tell, like I said, again, it's the Bible Belt. It's just something that's, I won't even say frowned upon. It's not existent in most Southern homes.
You say you did nothing wrong, you're innocent. And yet the pictures of her that surfaced would seem to suggest a woman who had some type of physical contact. How do you explain that?
I will stop you there and say that I didn't say I didn't do anything wrong. You know, that situation occurred and that situation was handled. But saying that I did nothing wrong is a stretch. But saying that I am innocent is correct. Yes, sir.
Did you ever put your hands on her?
No, sir.
Never?
No, sir.
Unbelievable words there from Greg Hardy. And in response to the interview, Ravens wide receiver Steve Smith chimed in on Twitter. So I guess she tripped on the carpet or something. My mom is a survivor of domestic violence, and I'm an advocate against domestic violence. And one final story here, Mike. Twitter has won the rights to live stream NFL games on Thursday nights this year. Verizon, Yahoo, Amazon, and Facebook were also reportedly in the bidding for streaming rights, though Facebook backed out last week. If you'll remember, obviously, Jaguars and Bills from London was broadcasted on Yahoo last year, the first time the NFL had done something like that, broadcasting only online. The game with the Bills and the Jags drew 33.6 million streams, 15.2 million unique viewers. And I know you have some comments on Greg Hardy.
Well, I have comments on all these things, actually. I mean, Greg Hardy, give me a break. He just said domestic violence is practically non-existent in the South because we're in the Bible Belt. You're an idiot. I mean, seriously. But look, do we not know he's an idiot? I don't fault Adam Schefter for interviewing Greg Hardy. I'm sure there'll be people that want to hear, you know, whether it's for the train wreck aspect or whatever the case may be, fine. He's newsworthy in some small degree or to some small degree. He certainly doesn't look like any team is willing to bring him in right now for the really relative lack of production that he had last year, especially late in the season. Come on. He said he was innocent. Yes, you're innocent because the case was dropped because you paid the woman off to not show up in court. I mean, so you're innocent in a court of law. I don't dispute that. That doesn't mean you didn't do anything to her. And I don't know anybody in their right mind who can have looked at the evidence in the Greg Hardy situation and thinks that he didn't put his hands on a woman to some degree in
that's
that instance.
That's
what got him convicted the
as
first
you can tell,
time.
Like I said, again, it's the Bible Belt. It's just something that's I won't even say frowned upon. It's non-existent.
Non-existent domestic violence in the Bible Belt. Sure, Greg Hardy's got a very firm grasp on reality. Greg Hardy, I don't think this helps you, buddy, going out there. I don't think some team is going to say now, oh, you know what? Greg Hardy never did anything wrong. If you really didn't do anything wrong, why are you waiting until now to speak up about it? I just don't understand. And if that's the case, any gag order that may be imposed on the woman that you settle with, why don't you remove it? If you didn't do anything wrong, you can't be afraid that she's going to say anything against you, right? Why, in fact, would you need to pay her off to begin with? I don't understand that. So in terms of the expansion of the playoffs with Goodell there, I think he's trying to not come out and, you know, he's playing to a particular audience there. He's in Jacksonville, Florida. He knows his team has not exactly been among the top 12 teams or pushing that limit in the recent years. So he's not going to say, oh, no, we're never going to expand the playoffs. He even said eventually it's very likely we're going to expand the playoffs or something like that, that at some point in time. But it didn't sound like the league is at all eager to tinker with what is a great formula right now. And if I were them, I wouldn't either. You could be too greedy sometimes. You got to think about the repercussions of this. If you add one playoff team in each conference, okay, fine. You can have one bye. You can play the other six out, and then you'll be left with four in each conference moving forward from there. But you start getting into what days are these teams playing on. There's discussion of Monday night playoff games. You're going to end up giving some teams much shorter weeks potentially than others, and much 2 days in the National Football League is a much shorter week in terms of preparation time. Trust me, ask any NFL coach, ask Gus Bradley, and he'll tell you, I would imagine, that that would be a significant impediment as you're trying to prepare and watch film and get ready for a playoff encounter with another team. But regardless, I don't see it happening anytime soon. I'm not in favor of it happening, and quite frankly. Go ahead, Tyler.
If the league does want to expand the playoffs, they can't just do it by themselves. It has to be approved by the NFL Players Association, correct?
Right, and because okay. It would be adding another game, but it would also be adding more. I think, look, the NFL Players Association is in a position where you want anything, we're going to want a concession from your side. If you're the one who brings this up, even though this, to me, would greatly benefit the players more than it would hurt the players in any way, shape, or form. You're only talking about two more teams playing one extra game. Two more teams playing one extra game under a scenario where you expand to 14 because they'd be eliminated along with the rest of the teams early on. And I guess you wouldn't have two byes. So you'd have a handful of extra games, but the amount of extra money that you would make on top of that, I think would wildly offset any further risk. And again, there's a risk every time these guys line up, whether it's a preseason, regular season, what have you. For the opportunity to play in the playoffs, you tell me a team that would be the first team out right now, the seventh team in either conference, which is currently on the outside looking in, that wouldn't line up to sign any safety waiver necessary to go to the postseason. So, yes, it is a safety issue to some degree. I think that is a small factor when you talk about the overall percentage those games would represent compared to all the regular season and postseason games that already exist. So,
and you think that we'd also
probably will happen eventually.
We'd also start to have a lot more teams in the playoffs with losing records, right? And that's not something you want to see.
I don't know. A lot. I don't know if you'd get a lot. Because the problem you have right now, the teams with losing records or 500 records are division winners. You're not going to have any more division winners. You're still going to have, you know, so theoretically, I think you would have very few instances, if ever, that a team with a losing record would qualify for a wild card spot. I doubt that that would be the case. Even if you look back historically, I doubt that you'd find an instance of the first team being on the outside looking in having a losing record. Now, maybe a 500 record in an occasional year. I think it's just a lot more likely you'd add another 9-17. But there are plenty of years when you do have a 10-win team that doesn't make it in because they didn't win their division. If you've got three at-large teams with 10 wins, it's, you know, fine. I don't have an issue if they look, it's not a deal-breaker for me if they expand by one in each conference. It is coming eventually. I'm with the don't-fix-it-if-it's-not-broken contingent right there. I think the NFL playoffs set a high bar to get in again compared to the rest of the sports leagues out there. I mean, I remember going back time in the 80s, there were 21 teams in the National Hockey League. 16 of them made the playoffs. What was the point? Right? I mean, so, you know, it is a pretty high bar, 12 teams out of the teams that are currently in the National Football League, all 32 of them vying for those 12
spots.
You
might as well hand out a participation trophy if you're getting 16 of the 21.
16 out of 21 was absurd. I mean, it really was. It was all, I guess, you played for playoff seeding and not, to not be one of those bottom five that didn't make it in back in the day. But the NFL, a far cry from that right now. And I hope they keep it right where it is. And it sounds like, at least for the foreseeable future, it doesn't sound like there's any big rush to make it happen. But if there's money to be earned out there, we've also learned that the NFL is not the one to leave too many dollars sitting out there on the table either. And who is, right? But you have to reach a point where you have to balance diminishing returns versus what you're getting back on it. And if they find a way to monetize it to their satisfaction, which I'm sure they will, we'll probably go down that road eventually. As far as streaming, as long as I can get the game in some form or fashion, I don't really care. I watch plenty of stuff on my iPad as it is. As long as the feed's good on Twitter I can figure out how am I watching it. I honestly don't know what that means, Tyler, that Twitter is going to stream these games. Where do you go? Like in your Twitter feed? Like if you go to Twitter.com, it brings you to the sign-in page, and once you sign in, you're on your own Twitter screen. Where do you watch? Where is the central, you know, Twitter site where you're going to stream games? I'm just ignorant of this. Do you know what they're talking about?
I don't know, but you have to assume they put some sort of, like, pop-up media player, like a link. It would just, you know, be right there on the front page, right dead center.
Something like that, right? Because
I don't see any details,
obviously,
yeah.
Like, Yahoo's got a website. You go to the website, and you click, and you go. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's I'm making it way more complicated than it needs to be. Just tell me what channel it's on or where I can find it, and as long as I can find it, I'll deal with it, and I'll be able to watch it. All right, coming back, we've got a 7-round mock for the boys at Roto World. We'll get into that a little bit. We'll also check in on the text line. Had an interesting question there about visitors that the Jaguars are having, and there are a bunch of them. We'll go through the list again. Some of the bigger name guys out there like Jalen Ramsey, Miles Jack, Vernon Hargrave, all expected to be visiting with the Jacksonville Jaguars today, according to various media sources around the First Coast. So we'll run down that list for you coming back as well. He's Tyler Devitt. I'm Mike Dempsey, and live at EverBank, it's Jaguars Today. Back with more Jaguars Today in a moment on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Dedicated to helping young people realize their full potential. He plays golf once a year right here at the 17th Challenge. Ladies and gentlemen.
He's not kidding.
Head coach of the Jaguars, Gus Bradley.
Be careful. I mean it now.
Gus going to the drink yesterday, Tyler? Is that what I'm...
Gus went in the drink. Yeah, Gus and Tony Baselli went in the drink. Blake got it on the edge and stayed on.
Hey, so he's on the improving. Edge is on.
He's improving.
You're good if you're on the edge, man. That's all it takes. I played Sunday like I play once every, I don't know, like it was maybe the first time I ever played. I was that bad on Sunday. And golf is that weird, at least for me, who's not very good and I don't have the day-to-day consistency for some reason. I found something that allowed me to get around the course yesterday. It's a funny game, that golf. But Gus unsuccessfully trying to deposit one on the green on 17 yesterday. But you see a lot more of that coming up. Players coming up, a lot of charity stuff going on. Draft coming up 3.5 weeks away. Tyler, before we get to, I got a couple of things I want to get to here. The 7-round mock, I want to run through just at least the picks and talk about the positions that Josh Norris of Roto World had projecting to the Jacksonville Jaguars, in addition to an interesting one on the text line, which is driven by Duval Four. But give us the full list that we have, to your knowledge, in terms of visitors coming in to see the Jags draft prospects in the next few days.
The most up-to-the-minute list that I have, and it seems like every Jaguars media member had an individual report. So Ryan O'Halloran said Jalen Ramsey's coming in today. Mike DiRocco said Miles Jack. Rand Getlin of the NFL Network said J'Ron Kearse, the Clemson safety, is also in today. Mark Long of the Associated Press says Vernon Hargraves is in. Mike Kay of First Coast News reports that Reggie Ragland, the Alabama linebacker, is in. And Johnny O, who was just on with us, says that Joey Bosa will also be in later today. And tomorrow, it's just one guy so far that I've seen, Ole Miss defensive end Robert Kamdichie, and that is according to Ian Rappaport.
All right. Someone on the text line, driven by Duval Ford, ask this question. Hi, Jaguars Today. Well, hello to the 620 area code. Could you explain why we would want to bring in a bunch of draft prospects at once? Wouldn't it be more difficult to get to know the players versus having them come in individually? Thanks. Well, thank you for being so polite and asking your question. My guess is, and this is, I think, just an educated guess, but I think this is in the ballpark, is that there are a couple of factors in play. One, you don't want to do this every single day, right? If you're Dave Caldwell, you want to spend the day with a new draft prospect every day and have to walk this guy around and kind of babysit him. I think so. You do it, for one, for expediency's sake. Let's get this in, get it over with. It depends on what you're trying to accomplish. If you're looking to spend 6 hours with one guy, maybe you do that if you're doing, you know, your quarterback who you're considering drafting. He's going to be the leader of your entire franchise. This is more a situation you're looking at guys that are going to kind of bring in and be plug and play and be part of a larger unit. We're not asking them necessarily be a leader right out of the gates. And I think part of it is, how do they interact with each other, right? Do you see some alpha personalities start to emerge? You see some other guys kind of shrink away when they're in a group with some other high-profile guys. You know, why do colleges bring in a bunch of players at the same time? Probably for some different reasons, but probably some of the same ones there. You want to see those guys interact as a group. Now, I think in college, cost and expediency and doing it all at once is a big part of it as well. You're not going to spread your resources out to just host one or two guys every single weekend. You're going to have some big major visit weekends happening with the top prospects. I think it's kind of like that. So they know what they want to accomplish. If they want to get, by the way, if you want to get a little individual time, there's nothing to say you can't have five guys in, and let's take them one at a time in for a 30-minute sit-down with the head coach or the general manager while the rest of them are being shown other aspects of whatever with the organization. So there are a lot of ways you can do it. I don't think it's a big deal, certainly, because it's their prerogative to do it this way. If they didn't like the effect that they were getting out of it, they could choose to do it another way. So
Does the Robert Kandici visit tomorrow surprise you, or is it just due diligence type of thing, or what?
I think, look, you're going to see them bringing a bunch of guys they don't end up drafting. That doesn't mean they won't draft Kandici, but Kandici was a guy that right now it's very difficult to know where he's going to go in the draft. I don't see him being a consideration for the Jaguars with the fifth overall pick, but Tyler, we know he was among a handful of prospects that were talked about as a potential number one overall pick in this year's draft. And if that's the case and you know he's probably going to slide, what if he's sitting there and he's available with the 38th pick? Right, I think it behooves you to have done your due diligence and really fully explored this guy. Or what if he's sitting there at the 25th pick and you feel like you've got the capital, the draft capital, to make a trade happen and come up and get this guy? Where does he fit in with your scheme? How do you envision using him? I think it's, why wouldn't you check him out if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars? So, bring him in, as we like to say, kick the tires and go from there. So I don't think Robert Kandici will end up being a Jag, but I think it's more likely because he just comes off the board between 5 and 38 at some point in time. Doesn't mean the Jags won't move for a player, but the odds are greater that they don't, I think. We were talking about this Roto-World mock this morning a little bit. Went through the team needs when John Osier was in here with us earlier. Evan Silva of Roto-World did that aspect of it. As it said, in his eyes, top three needs were edge rusher, which we agreed with, center, which we don't agree is the next biggest need, and then linebacker is certainly among their top needs for the Jags. So Josh Norris, who is kind of their self-styled draft guy at Roto-World, put out his mock draft. Here's who he's got the Jags taken. Again, I don't think it's as important who the names are specifically as much as what positions are being addressed. But he starts off with Miles Jack. And Norris has said this pretty consistently. I'll just read the write-up on a few of these. He said, I consider Jack the top prospect in this draft class. In other words, he is his Jack rated as his number one overall player on his quote-unquote big board of players. Jack can play, according to Norris, like a 260-pound power linebacker or display the agility of a 200-pound coverage specialist. He moves differently than most players at the position. Linebackers tend to play better when working behind a talented defensive line, an area where Jacksonville continues to add talent. Pozlesny needed to be benched 2 seasons ago. Well, excuse me, I think on third down, certainly. I think Paul Pozlesny still brings you value on early downs. But I think if Miles Jack were in here, it would be an eye towards ultimately, maybe by 2017, replacing Paul Pozlesny on a full-time basis in the middle. So Miles Jack with the pick with the fifth overall selection wouldn't shock anybody. I don't think it would disappoint too many. There may be some true believers now. Maybe if Ramsey were available and they chose Jack over him, they wouldn't like it. Or even probably a few out there, hey, if edge rush is our biggest need, why aren't we taking Joey Bosa or whomever for that matter? But Miles Jack's a pick there. Then in round two, and I discussed it with John earlier as well, we both agree I'd be a little bit surprised if they went offensive line this early. But if Ryan Kelly of Alabama is available as the consensus top center, perhaps they deviate off the kind of penciled in plan. But he's got Norris has the Jags taking center Nick Martin out of Notre Dame. He is Zach Martin's younger brother. And as he said, he's not as talented as his older brother, but definitely projects as an NFL starter. Ryan Kelly's the top center, has a chance to still be on the board. And I also love Jack Allen's game, so he definitely sees them considering a center. I don't know. I'm getting the feeling, Tyler, that people are not picking up on the signals that the Jags are sending about how much confidence they have in Brandon Linder playing center for this football team.
And it seems like they've pretty much said that move's going to happen without really saying it, I guess. They seem like he's a guy they are super confident in, if they do move him in, that he could do the job well.
Right, and I'm not saying, look, if Ryan Kelly's there and he's your top center on the board, or what did he win, the Remington Award? Is that what they give to the top center in college football? And you say, all right, we're going to take this guy, fine. But I don't think it's a case where they're like, wow, boy, we got to figure out something because we're not too comfortable with Linder playing there. If he has to play center, fine. If we can keep him at guard, fine. I don't think it's one of those deals where they're going to be reaching. And it sounds like he's convincing himself that they're going to reach to fill that, what they consider a need in the second round. We'll see. I'm not agreeing with that just with any type prospect.
Yeah, and we talked to Charles Davis on Friday, and he actually thinks that Nick Martin is a starting center as a rookie in the league. So he's a fan of them. Yeah.
Right. Right. So he's got him taking Martin in the second round. A guy that I think a lot of people who do the fan mocks and stuff out there have to the Jags at some point, Matt Judon from Grand Valley State, an edge rusher, and the comment the Jaguars failed to add a true edge rusher in free agency will force them to panic a bit and take one earlier than other teams might. In a limited crop, Judon has real second-day potential. Judon runs the arc very well, has a strong motor, and good backfield vision. And everyone's eyes is glazed over with a series of draft turns.
He runs the arc very well.
Runs the arc very well. What the hell? Honestly, what is the arc now? What is the arc? I'm sure, you know what it is? It's probably something that we know under another name and have called it something under another name for years, but now, much like length has replaced height, and I understand that length refers to a player's reach, basically. What happened to the word reach, right? He's got a reach or a wingspan. Now he's got great length. And they add these terms to make it seem like they're a little bit more in the know than the rest of us.
How is he at flipping his hips? Is he okay at that?
Oh, you got to flip your hips, but I think it's more important for a defensive back flipping hips than it is for Matt Judon to flip hips. So we're not talking hip flipping now. We're talking about running the arc, Tyler, which neither of us is quite clear what that means, and I'm okay with that. So moving on, let's go to, we had Scott Wright on last week as well from Draft Countdown, and he suggested the Jags might take cornerback Jalen Mills at LSU in round three. Well, here Norris has him going to the Jags in round four. It's always interesting to see where they line some of these players up and they pair them up in terms of value. I always get mocks sent to me, and we've commented on this in the last few weeks in particular on Twitter or Facebook. Hey, what do you think of this mock? And you got a guy who the consensus says will go in round two or three, that they have the Jags taken around five or six. Well, yeah, I really like that mock. You know what? I'd really like the mock that allows us to get Jalen Ramsey in round one, Bosa in round two, and Miles Jack in round three. Is there a mock out there like that? Because I would endorse that one as well. So you got to be a little bit within the realm of reality. Round five, he's got him going safety. Kayvon Frazier out of Central Michigan, a big safety with plus athleticism. Plus is a definite draft term. It was more of a baseball term for years. The guy's got a plus fastball, an exceptional fastball, an elite level fastball, whatever. It's a plus whatever. He's got plus athleticism. Can you just say he's a great athlete, right? A big safety with great athleticism. No, he's got plus athleticism. Because, again, I have to convince you that I'm really into this drafting thing, that I'm going to use these terms that are not as household. Or plus is not, that far out in left field, but it's just it's a little bit of an annoyance to me how often they try to squeeze these things in. He's got to take another edge rusher in Steven Weatherly out of Vanderbilt in round six. Bo Sandlin, a tight end out of Montana State with their second sixth-round pick, a receiving tight end who has experience in-line blocking where he showed a willingness to block. Hey, great, he's willing to block, Coach, as opposed to this tight end who says he absolutely will not block if drafted by – I understand what they're saying. A willingness is more of a, it's more of an attitude thing. You're willing to stick your nose in there. Some guys, when asked to block, don't seem to commit to the prospect. They see themselves as more finesse or receiving-type tight ends. And then finally, Marquez North, a wide receiver out of Tennessee, who Norris, it sounds like, says is just kind of a value pick at that point. People might be suspicious of a talent like North falling to the seventh round. Medicals and a complete drop in production could lead to it, he says. All right, maybe. Look, you can't discount anything late in the draft if a guy is on Dave Caldwell's board standing out like a sore thumb. If they've got a player at any position that they grade as a third-round value, and they're sitting there in round six, and they filled a bunch of needs, they'll take that guy, whether they really need it or not, because he represents such a good value. That's how teams operate. Remember last year, and it maybe wasn't the case in reality, but Mel Kiper's board, he kept saying by about round three or four that Michael Bennett, who the Jags ultimately ended up drafting out of Ohio State, was the best player available and represented this great value and great value and great value. And in that sense, I think the Jags did get a value. We'll find out what it ultimately is. And when we see where he fits into the plans, he's going to have to really hustle for playing time this year. But anyway, they go. So it's linebacker, center, edge rusher, corner, safety, another edge rusher, a tight end, and a wide receiver. I could see him drafting a tight end more than I could see them drafting a wide receiver on this football team this year. But again, when value meets late round opportunity, sometimes you kind of go off the board in the direction you thought you were going to go because you can't pass up a certain player because the value is just that good. So there you have it. You can go to rotoworld.com and read more of the details of their seven-round mock and who they have projected fully to the Jacksonville Jaguars there. Also, Todd McShay updating his top 32 player board this morning, as a matter of fact. It always amuses me. Certain players are moving up despite not having worked out or done anything differently from his last update. But nevertheless, we'll run through the top 10 selections when we come back on the other side. The question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. We've asked you today, what is your favorite non-NFL sporting event that you look forward to? And we'll get through some of the responses on Twitter, Facebook, and the like when we come back. Mike Dempsey, Tyler Devitt, I'm live at Everbank. He's at 1010XL World Headquarters. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, final 10 minutes or so, a lot to accomplish here in the final 10 minutes. It's critical. The rest of our broadcast lives will depend on it. So hang on the edge of your seats here, Tyler. We got this one on the 1010XL text line as driven by Duval Ford that said the arc is the equivalent. It's a three-cone drill by another name.
Was that Josh Norris who texted in?
No. Well, maybe. I don't know. If he has a 904 area code, then maybe it was him who texted it in. Now somebody else said the arc is the lane from the tackle to the quarterback.
Those are two completely different things.
Right. So I don't buy either one of these answers now. I don't know what it is, and I'm bothered by the fact that he would think I would look it up and care enough. Just call it by what it's been called forever. You don't need to come up with some new name to show how insider you are with these things. It's a little bothersome, but nevertheless, we'll get to the fan feedback spotlight coming up in a moment here. Let me look at Todd McShay's adjusted big board, which is up this morning. Guys are moving up. Guys are moving down. Joey Bosa remains in the top spot. Says, well, he doesn't have the elite speed off the edge, as evidenced by his combine 40 time. He shows the relentlessness and instincts shared by most top-level NFL pass rushers. Okay, whatever. Just honestly, isn't it? It's wearing on all of us at this point. Laramie Tunsil, number two. DeForest Buckner out of Oregon, the defensive end, number three. Jalen Ramsey, fourth overall. Ezekiel Elliott, number five. And then he's got Miles Jack at number six, an explosive athlete who moonlighted as a running back. We know all this stuff. He doesn't write anything new. really about Miles Jack as far as that goes. Going beyond that, Ronnie Stanley, the offensive tackle out of Notre Dame.
Speaking of Ronnie Stanley, this just coming across from Peter Schrager. Ronnie Stanley is in Jacksonville visiting the Jags today.
Well, there you go. Ronnie Stanley now is a consideration for the Jags. See, is he really? I don't know. You know, I mean, what are the circumstances that would find the Jags drafting Ronnie Stanley, would you think? They traded back. You'd have to start there, wouldn't you? I can't imagine.
Possibly they're going to trade back with the Rams at 15?
Or whomever. I mean, you don't know who's going to offer you. You know, you're not going to sit there and say, oh, let's come up with a hypothetical trade back to the Rams. I think.
But not at 5, though, right?
I can't see it. Can you?
I don't know about that.
I don't think you pass up the chance to get who most people feel is the second best offensive tackle in this draft at the expense of passing up a potential difference making defensive player when you've needed so much on the defensive side of the football. So I'd be surprised. So anyway, Stanley, look, due diligence, all that's fine. Come on in, check these guys out. You know, maybe there's some scenario out there where they trade back and he becomes the best player available. Jack Conklin, offensive tackle out of Michigan State. Darren Lee, linebacker from Ohio State, outside linebacker. And Carson Wentz, round out your top 10 for McShay. Yep, knew it. They all do this. Carson Wentz and Jared Goff are within one position of each other, 10 and 11. That way, I'm a firm believer that's because they want to be able to go back and say, well, I had him right there. I mean, really, there wasn't much difference separating these two guys if the guy that they have ranked behind the other one turns out to be the better player. That's my guess, but I'm a cynic, so that's just the way I operate as far as that goes. Someone also asked on the text line, driven by Duval Ford, is there a second-place T-shirt prize for the Jaguars today bracket challenge? The answer to that would be a big fat no, Tyler. Do we know who won the bracket challenge? Are you able to suss that out?
I just pulled it up, and I believe I'll be able to email him, but his username for the bracket challenge was Smo5501. So Smo5501, congrats.
Smo5501. Do you have his bracket handy? Can you see what he put in terms of who he had winning the championship? Did he have Nova, or
yes,
what did he have?
He actually had Villanova, or he had Carolina winning last night, so he still won despite that being incorrect, but he did have three of the final four correct, Villanova, Oklahoma, and UNC. He had Michigan State in there, which that hurt a lot of people.
Yeah, but did it? Because if everyone's got them, how bad does it hurt? You know,
if it hurts everyone, it hurts no one then, in reality.
Right, I had Purdue and Michigan State. Once they got knocked out, I was like, all right, I'm right back in the game. And I heard the boys this morning discussing it. Brent Martineau won the 1010XL Bracket Challenge, lost two of his final four on the first day of the tournament.
So, I think Brent Martineau was ready to shed some tears after his bracket was officially busted, he said, that Monday. And how does he end up winning? I don't get that.
Because the rest of us suck, apparently. Apparently we're no good at picking the NCAA tournament. I think that's what it boils down to. Ian Rappaport says Noah Spence also visiting the Jaguars this week. So everyone's heart just went all aflutter with that one because there are a lot of Noah Spence lovers here in town. And that's fine. All right, here are the question that I asked you. What's your favorite sporting event, non-NFL sporting event? By the way, what is yours, Tyler Devitt? What would you say is your favorite?
If I had to choose, that's so tough. I think if I'd have to go NBA Finals, I love the NBA Finals.
Okay. No, regardless of who plays in it.
Regardless of who plays, the environment, the arenas are always packed. Everyone's almost always on their feet the whole game. And it's the best players in the world. The talent is incredible, and something amazing always happens.
You're a basketball fan. I respect that opinion. Absolutely. NBA Finals, I think you wouldn't get the vast majority of people in Jacksonville picking that, but that's fine. I mean, that's why it comes down to personal preference. I love the Ryder Cup. It's, look, if I know the Yankees are in the World Series, I pick the Yankees in the World Series. I pick the Knicks in the NBA Finals. Yes, it's happened in my lifetime, all right? It doesn't happen very often. But you know what I mean? I mean, your own team, it's a different story. If Florida State were playing for the national title in football, I'd pick that. But it's not the Final Four of college football, to me, is not more exciting than the Ryder Cup. The Ryder Cup delivers to me every time, even though the United States doesn't win it nearly as much as I would like. Here's some of the responses we got on Twitter this morning. Chef Jag said Dodgers baseball. We had a few people throw WrestleMania or some wrestling references in there. Remember, we said sporting events, so you're all ineligible. For what? I don't know. Eric Harris said with lots. NCAA tournament, both College World Series, the Master. No. You get one. If you have six favorites, you don't have any favorites, okay? You can't have a six-way tie for first. Grant, is a man after your own heart with the NBA Finals. Hashtag Jaguars today. Union Jack's Joe went with Six Nation Rugby. Can you guess which are the six nations in Six Nation Rugby, Tyler? Ooh, what do you got?
I'm going to start off with New Zealand.
That's incorrect.
Oh, that's a bad first guess. Australia.
Australia's strike two.
Oh, damn. Ooh.
Where do you think Union Jack's Joe hails from?
I didn't hear Union Jack's Joe, so I'm going to go ahead and go with the UK. Great Britain.
We'll go with England. How about this? I'll just read them to you. Wales, Ireland, England, Scotland. There's your UK. France and Italy. And they beat the crap out of each other, and Union Jack's Joe is a fan of that. Official Oz Dog said March Madness until UK loses NBA Finals, Stanley Cup, Royal Rumble. But he ranked them 1 through 4. He didn't claim they were a tie. T-Mock said the Players and the Masters. So you got that going for you. Chris went with me. It's a title fight. If you get a good title fight like Hagler Hearns or Ali Frazier, I love a good fight. Do we get too many of those anymore? Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be the way. Brian went with the Rolex 24 hours at Daytona. So the infield is a different world at night, sensory overload. All right, I'll take your word for it. Hey, it's your favorite thing. Black Dog said Daytona 500 with the Olympic sprints and relays a close second. All right. Another Daytona 500. That's my boy Wayne at Wass Racing. He is a big fan of the Fantasy NASCAR League for Jaguars today, which I was not happy with Denny Hamlin this past week. I'm just going to leave it at that. Game 7 overtime, Stanley Cup. Can't beat it. But it's also not a scheduled thing. Mike sent that one in. Again, if you knew Stanley Cup Game 7 was going to overtime, that's about as nail-biting as it gets because it can end for a win for either team at any given moment, practically. One steal of the puck and a race down the ice, boom, and it's over that quickly. But that's not a scheduled event. Stanley Cup Finals, fine. But if it's only when it goes to a 7-game overtime scenario, I would wager then that the Stanley Cup Finals would not be your favorite sporting event. But, hey, whatever the case may be, Kentucky Derby getting votes. A lot of different folks out there. Jack's Armada getting some love. The Players' Championship, Suns Baseball all getting some love.
Any World Cup selections there?
I did not get World Cup, but Hacker did not weigh in on the question today. So I'm assuming World Cup followed by Women's World Cup. What about Abby Wambach, by the way? Hey, Abby, way to be a good role model for the kids. And just another DUI loser. Unbelievable. People, at what point do you grow up and realize you can't drink and drive? You're an idiot and all. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. It was a mistake. No, makes me wonder how many times you've done it before and gotten away with it is all it makes me do. So,
and similar to other professional leagues, I'm pretty sure the women's team, national team, is provided transportation if they want to go out. So that's her own fault for not taking advantage.
Well, she's retired. I don't know if you can call up the women's national team at this point and say, hey, I'm going over to the family's house for dinner. Can I get a ride? I'm not sure. I'm sure all Uber drivers like yourself would be happy to oblige her, however. So definitely make sure Tyler is your Uber driver or else bad things will happen to you. Yet more bad Uber stories I listened to this morning on the way in. There's one for Alvaro. He threw it under the wire, World Cup. Hey, Alvaro has the preparations coming down there in Brazil. Oh, my goodness. Not looking good. But, hey, we hope for the best for you, Alvaro. We'll see how it goes. That'll do it for us today. Thanks to John Osier for stopping by to talk a little Jaguar football with us. March it ever closer. I'll be in Chicago 3 weeks from tomorrow getting ready for the NFL draft. Hopefully the final touches on a Jaguar playoff roster will be put together. Crazier things have happened. 5 wins to the postseason. It has happened before. It can happen again. Will the Jags make the right calls? We'll find out coming up in a little over 3 weeks from now. That does it for us. Tony Smith, I hope he's enjoying his week off. For Tony, for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey signing off. Thanks again to everybody who helped put on the Guggen yesterday with the station, all the sponsors and listeners who participated out there, Slammer and Squire, and the folks out at the World Golf Village, absolutely phenomenal, phenomenal time. I had a great time out there yesterday. Look forward to the 10th annual coming up next year, so make your plans for that. Make your plans for XL Primetime because they're coming up next here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.